This is Think Energy, the podcast that helps you better understand the fast-changing world of energy through conversations with game changers, industry leaders, and influencers. So join me, Dan Sege, as I explore both traditional and unconventional facets of the energy industry. Hey everyone, welcome back. Chances are you've either been a victim of a scam or you know someone who has. According to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center, there were more than 90,000 reports of fraud in 2022. This resulted in $530 million lost to scams in Canada last year alone. Of that $530 million, only $2.4 million was recovered. That's how successful these criminals are. The most common method fraudsters are using to scam Canadians? Email and telemarketing. It may or may not be surprising, but the energy industry is no stranger to the world of scam artists looking to make a quick money from unsuspecting energy customers. And we've seen an increase in their efforts to call, text, email, and even show up in person at a customer's home and place of business to intimidate and threaten. Since the pandemic began in 2020, the Canadian RCMP have seen a significant increase in fraudulent activity, with approximately 70% done through cyber attacks. And as we've seen firsthand in the energy industry, fraudsters are becoming more and more sophisticated, evolving with the times. Yet, according to a recent survey by Chartered Professional Accountants Canada, 62% of Canadians are actively taking steps to protect themselves from scammers. But is it enough? So here's today's big question. How can we better protect ourselves from scams, and what are your options if you've been scammed by a fraudster? Joining me on today's show is Jared Lawrence, Vice President of Revenue Services and Metering at Duke Energy, one of the largest electric power holding companies in the U.S. Duke Energy provides electricity to 7.7 million customers in Florida, the Carolinas, and part of the Midwest. Jared is also the founder and executive committee chair of an organization known as Utility United Against Scams. Jared, welcome to the show. Now, scams are such a big problem in our industry that there's a Utility Scam Awareness Day and a National Scam Awareness Week. That's how big the problem's gotten. What can you tell us about the Utility United Against Scams and your vision when you started it?
That's an excellent question. And there's actually a Hydro-Ottawa connection that I'll get to in a second, Dan. But really, Utilities United Against Scams started as a result of an internal investigation at my company. We were hosting our CEO, actually in our call center, where both our customer care agents as well as the back office employees who report to me were having a Q&A session with our CEO. And one of the customer care specialists raised her hand and said, "Ms. Good, I'm really concerned. We have a lot of customers calling up about scammers, and they're convinced that these scammers actually have their information. What are we doing about this?" And this was back in 2015. So this was in the context of a number of high-profile breaches with major retailers that were in the media, and so this was something we were, you know, definitely had a heightened sensitivity to. And she actually looked at me as one of the two leaders in the room and said, "Yes, Jared, what are we doing about that?" I said, "Well, we're not doing anything right now, but we're going to start tomorrow." And so we commissioned a SWAT team internally to make sure that there were no data breaches, no breaches with our vendors, no inside, bad actors who were sharing information with scammers. And it became apparent very quickly that these scammers did not actually have customer information. They were just brilliant social engineers, and all of our information networks were completely secure. So we got to the end of that effort. It took about, 3 weeks to do that intensive investigation. And then I said to the team, well, now what? We're not going to leave these folks, our customers out there to fend for themselves against these criminals. What have we learned from this and what can we do about it? And it became apparent to me pretty quickly that this is a problem of international scale, but each utility was attacking it as an individual entity, and we would have so much more presence, so much more of a voice in the public policy space if we joined together as the influential industry that serves the public, and use our clout to basically push for change and to better protect our customers. So that's how the concept of Utilities United Against Scams was born. I made the pitch to a number of attendees at CS Week. And so for, many folks in the utility industry are aware that CS Week is the customer service focused conference for utility professionals. This was back in the spring of 2016 then. And immediately the cause essentially sold itself. There were 25 utility organizations represented in the room, and every single one of them came up to me afterwards and expressed interest in becoming part of this vision of this industry effort. But it was actually in a breakfast conversation later on during the conference with Dave McKendry, who's retired from Hydro Ottawa, who's become a friend of mine through our board work on CS Week. And he pulled me aside. He said, Jared, I've been thinking a lot about your Utilities United Against Scams effort. And I suggest maybe you consider a national campaign. And the fact that utilities across North America are coming together to work together for this specific event, this specific campaign, that's newsworthy in and of itself. And I think, Jared, that if you take that approach, you will be able to attract so much more interest in this cause and, frankly, so much more membership. And he was spot on. I thought it was a fantastic suggestion. We made that kind of the centerpiece of our first few months of existence back in 2016, culminating with our National Utility Scam Awareness Day and National Utility Scam Awareness Week in November of 2016. The U.S. House of Representatives, of course, recognized us with the declaration of National Utility Scam Awareness Day. And we went from 25 utility organizations that expressed interest at that first conference to 89 members by the time we got to that campaign in November. And since then, we've grown to where we are today at exactly 150 across the U.S. and Canada. So it's grown beyond what I honestly could have expected or hoped for, but certainly not beyond that vision of the industry coming together to protect our customers against this very important scourge.
Okay, Jared. What types of scams are appearing most often? Can you maybe provide some real life examples? And has the global pandemic altered scam activity and its frequency?
Excellent question. And so at the core, the scam that was the main focus of utilities back in 2015 when I started our investigation at Duke Energy and it remains today, it's that classic disconnection threat scam. So a customer gets a call from out of the blue from somebody purporting to be a representative of the utility, and they state that due to some sort of problem with the account or some sort of problem with a payment being returned by a bank or some fabricated excuse like that, the customer's account is now overdue, and there is a disconnection technician en route to turn off the customer's power. Usually it's power. Sometimes it's other utilities, but it's almost always power within the next 30 to 45 minutes. And so the customer needs to act. They need to go purchase typically a prepaid card and call the scammers back with that information within the next 30 to 45 minutes to prevent disconnection. That was their bread and butter back in 2015. It's still their bread and butter today. What's interesting is that we've seen little variations. The scammers, they're attuned to what's happening in their market, so to speak, and how utilities and law enforcement and others are reacting to their tactics. And so they've tried certain things. So, for example, one of the things that we saw at Duke Energy was that when our smart meters were being deployed in each of our territories and in our six electric states, the scammers at various times would attempt to they changed the tactic and focus on a meter deposit that the customer had failed to pay, something that wouldn't typically show up on a bill, that kind of thing. Trying to capitalize on that, on the headlines associated with utility and with utility at that particular time. Those didn't work very well. So we tend to see the attempt to collect that meter deposit, that scam fell off pretty quickly. We've seen the scammers attempt text and email sporadically. Those don't seem to work very well either because they don't have the same level of immediacy that a phone call has. So those tend to flare up at times and then die out on their own. We've seen the scammers explore different payment channels. So we've had some customers report that the scammers have asked them to pay in Bitcoin, which of course is absurd because I don't know about Hydro Iowa, but Duke Energy certainly does not accept Bitcoin. We've seen them request Zelle transfers, which are actually traceable, so that wouldn't work very well for the banks. We've seen several scammers recently try and use Cash App, but their bread and butter has historically been prepaid cards and one or two prepaid cards in particular, brands of which I won't mention on this podcast, but there are one or two that stand out above all the rest as being particularly susceptible to fraud. Oh, and I'm sorry, Dan, you also asked me about the global pandemic, if you address that. So there was a fascinating cycle that we observed during 2020. So our utility and utilities all across the world probably were announcing suspensions of their credit collections policies and suspensions of disconnections. We saw the scammers initially attempting to plow through that and continue to attempt their disconnection scams, but we just saw customers weren't falling for it. Customers were completely attuned to the fact that utilities had disconnected, had suspended their disconnection practices. And so the scammers, after attempting for a little while, the volume really started to taper off. But immediately when we started talking about a reinstitution of some of our credit and collections practices, starting to, even though we were working with customers, still letting customers know that they were going to have to get onto a payment arrangement in order to avoid disconnection toward the end of the year, the scammers were clearly paying attention to the media around us and other utilities, and immediately they started ramping up. It's as if they had gotten behind on their annual revenue goals, and they felt that they needed to ramp back up their activities. And so it turned out that 2020 as a whole ended up being one of the highest volume years in terms of scams since we created our database at Duke Energy, and where there were over 20,000 scam reports of the year, the vast majority of them happening in late summer throughout the remainder of the year when scammers knew that we had started to, in modified form, reinstate some of our credit collections policies.
Okay, thanks, Jared. Are there any specific population groups who are frequently targeted? How can we, as a community, offer better support to these groups? What's the best line of defense?
So, again, as with everything that I've seen in the 6 years that I've been heavily engaged in this topic, they tend to go in cycles. And so in the beginning, it seemed to be random. The victims, the targets seemed to be random. And so since it was random, there was, statistically, the vast majority of utility customers are residential. And so there was a heavy focus on residential customers. What we started to see is, and obviously I've never spoken with a scammer to validate this, but what we started to see was that the scammers started to use tools, probably online maps, simple tools like Google Maps, et cetera, to determine what were the businesses in a particular area and how close were they to some of the retail outlets that sold the prepaid cards that they like to use. And the reason they were focusing on businesses is if they caught up a residential customer and they would say to a residential customer, you're behind on your bill, you owe us 2 months. Well, they really couldn't ask for more than, a couple $100 because a typical residential customer knows that their average utility bill is not going to be that much more than $100 unless it's the heat of the summer or the depth of winter. But they recognized if they started calling restaurants, and veterinary clinics, and others that are fairly energy intensive, that they could ask for thousands of dollars. And it would work because at the same time, they would get into a rhythm where they would call these particular businesses during what they knew to be, for example, a restaurant's busiest part of the day during the lunch hour, a veterinarian's busiest type of day, right in mid-afternoon when they might have had dogs and cats under sedation, a dry cleaner's busiest time of the day, right around 5 o'clock in the rush hour period when people are dropping in to pick up their dry cleaning, things like that. The scammers became very intelligent about, again, on that social engineering aspect of focusing in on the times when their victims were most vulnerable. What we've tended to see, and I do think that these scammers are paying attention and noticing the impacts from Utilities United Against Scams, in that over the course of the last few years, we have forged a partnership with an organization called SOMOS, which is the toll-free number administrator for basically all toll-free phone lines across North America. And what started happening was that we were getting there, through this partnership, we were having the scammers' 1-800 numbers disconnected. And the scammers started to recognize this. And so they have migrated toward more of a robocalling model now, where they call up and they say, instead of asking a customer to call back, they say, press this number to speak to, press one to speak to somebody about your delinquent bill, for example. And because they're using robocalls now, it's much more random again. And so we're seeing a shift back toward a higher preponderance of residential customers. Now, all along, we have seen, particularly with the utility scam, that Spanish-speaking populations and Spanish-speaking businesses in particular have been more vulnerable. And I think there's two reasons for this. The first of which is that in my conversations with law enforcement and my direct conversations with these scammers, because I talk to them a lot when I'm calling up to validate that they're using fraud numbers, I call them up and try and play along and pretend I'm a victim. They seem to be originating from Spanish-speaking countries, most likely in Latin America, and law enforcement has corroborated that. And sometimes when I call them up, they're actually answering the line in Spanish, meaning that they are targeting Spanish businesses in particular at that particular time. And they seem to be much more fluent in Spanish than they are in English at times as well. So, so the reason that we think that this customer group is more vulnerable is because there is a natural language barrier between the routine communications that they would receive from a utility versus the communications that they're receiving from these scammers. And therefore that might cut through some of the awkwardness that a native English speaker might pick up on if they were being contacted by somebody who isn't a native English speaker originally versus being a native Spanish speaker. And the second too is that there just seems to be a little bit of less of a reflex of distrust amongst Spanish speaking businesses and Spanish speaking community, a greater trust in official communications. Or official sounding communications rather than a reflex to immediately distrust something that hits them out of the blue. And so we have seen a disproportionate number of Spanish speaking businesses being targeted and showing up on our victims list.
So in general, Jared, is there anything customers can do to proactively guard themselves and their loved ones against scams?
Great question. So I am a big fan of these anti-robocall services, such as Noma Robo. It's the one that we use at our house. I'm not a paid spokesman for Noma Robo, but I have through the scam work come to know the founder and president of Noma Robo. And from the call registries that he's shared with us, we are seeing that they're doing a good job of blocking a lot of these scam calls that are coming from these criminals. So I recommend that because that'll just reduce the likelihood that a household or a business that these calls are making it through the filters in the first place. The second thing is really just to know the signs. So, you know, the basic signs are that a utility, the first communication you get from a utility about a potentially delinquent bill or a problem with a payment is not going to be 30 minutes before you're disconnected. And a utility, a true utility representative is not going to insist on one particular type of payment. They're not going to make you drive down the street to a local retail outlet, get a specific thing, tell you not to talk to the clerk, and then force you to come back and make that payment quickly. And if you express any doubts at all about the legitimacy of the call, a legitimate utility representative will be more than happy to have you contact the utility directly using the published number, the published contact channels on your actual bill versus what they give you. Whereas a scammer is going to resist all of those because they know once you do that, the gig is up. So that's really, those are the key there. You want to reduce your vulnerability, your exposure to scam communications in the first place. And then if they do get through, just be highly educated on those signs.
This next one is important. What are some ways to identify a utility scammer over the phone via text message? And the scariest of them all, at your door. What are the red flags to look out for? The best way to deal with them?
So again, I think that the number one thing to keep in mind is that it is very rare that you will get an urgent communication from your utility about a billing problem that's with disconnection being imminent out of the blue within the next 45 minutes, that will be the first communication. So a utility scammer typically is somebody who contacts you with a sense of urgency and there's a lot of pressure built into that communication. They will then resist. They will try and talk you out of seeking independent verification of their identity. So whether it's a call that you get, if you say, well, do you mind if I just hang up and call the number back on your official website just to validate this? A scammer will try and talk you out of that. They'll say something like, the driver's already on his way. Or if even worse, if they're at your door and you open the door and you are not expecting them, a utility representative will be more than happy to allow you to take the time to call the customer care center to validate their legitimacy, whereas a criminal will try and convince you that something is very urgent and you don't have the time to do so. Those are some of the most obvious signs of a criminal who's trying to pressure you into taking action before you have time to think and get the facts straight. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead. The other thing to keep in mind too is, and we saw this from the very beginning when going back to that first customer care rep who raised that concern because she felt that she was relaying the customers felt that their information had been compromised when in fact it wasn't. Just because somebody posing as a utility rep seems to have your info, it does not make them legitimate. Unfortunately, most information about us as individuals, as consumers, is available out there on the web. That's just one of the sad facts about modern life. Additionally, though, these scammers are brilliant social engineers, and they're very good at making you think that they have legitimate information. So even if a scammer calls up and they quote something that sounds like your legitimate balance, don't trust them. In fact, one of the early cases that got that we researched that first month when we deployed that SWAT team I was talking about that really convinced me of the nature of this problem was we had one particular customer who had reported that the scammer had their balance, their actual balance. And we looked at the account and sure enough, the information that the customer had reported to us did align with what their most recent bill was. And so we talked to the customer and we said, well, tell us how the conversation went. And they started to think about it. And what they finally recalled was that the scammer called them up and said, there was a problem with your last payment. Your payment did not go through. The victim then said, well, wait a minute. Let me go. I happen to be on my online banking system right now. Let me look right here. And I see my payment for $271.30 or whatever it was. It went through on October 4th or whatever it was. And then the scammer says, no, I see your payment for $271.30. And it actually got rejected the next day, October 5th, by your bank. And so now the person who was caught off guard by this call in the first place is thinking, oh, this person must be legitimate because he has a system right there and my payment is in it and he knows all about my transaction. Well, no, you told them. You know, they tricked you into giving them that information. And so that's the other key, is to never, ever volunteer account information or personal information. If somebody calls you up out of the blue and they are legitimate, they will understand if you don't want to volunteer information. They will give you the opportunity to call back their official customer care line. But if somebody calls you out of the blue and starts asking for information about you, that is another clear sign that a scam is likely on. You're likely the victim of a scam.
Now, let's say I'm a customer who fell victim to a scam, losing money and possibly personal information on the process. What are my options? Is there anyone or anywhere specific that customers can turn to for help?
Well, so there's some good news, but a lot of not good news to share on that front, Dan. So the first thing I would recommend is, if you have fallen victim and if you have made a payment using any sort of, you know, prepaid card or electronic payment channel, immediately call the fraud line associated with the payment method that you used and do it quickly. The reason is that, and I'm speaking about the prepaid cards in particular, the way these scammers work is that they're targeting multiple victims, you know, across the country at any given one time, across the continent at any one time. And what they do is they call you up, they trick you into making that payment. And basically in doing that, they transfer your money from the card number you provide to a destination card that they're using to collect, and I'll use in quotes, launder the funds. And then every few minutes, they sweep the money off of those cards. So there is typically a small window where, if the scammers have not liquidated those funds into the ether, that if you happen to call back, you might be able to get your money back. But you've got to move quickly, because a lot of these payment channels that they use are attractive to scammers, particularly because they're non-reversible. And so your timing has to be very quick and very spot on with those. So that's the first thing to do. The second thing to do is to file a police report. Now, sadly, because these criminals are typically perpetrating their crimes from offshore, they are not going to be reachable with local law enforcement. But nonetheless, it's important that you file the police report so that it enters the law enforcement database. It helps the various folks in law enforcement at the national level who are trying to create, you know, enough of a body of evidence to investigate these cases, investigate these syndicates that are running these scams. And I'll also to mention that, for example, the United Way 211 service here in North Carolina, and there are other organizations, they actually have resources that are available for victims of cybercrime and other frauds. So I would reach out to your local community assistance agency if you have suffered any financial hardship as a result of being targeted, to determine what resources they have. I'm not aware of any that can restore the funds that you've lost, but they can maybe help you cope with any financial hardship that you're suffering in the near term as a result of being targeted. And then finally, you know, report the attempt to your utility, because Utility United Against Scams, we use this information to refine our strategies. We use this information for our engagement with our telecom partners, our engagement with law enforcement and government officials to support law enforcement efforts and to try and better shape public policy to protect customers against these types of scams.
Now, maybe we could look at prevention. What are utility companies and police force doing to help deter and fight against scammers? Can you tell us any success stories of scammers being deterred, or better yet, caught?
Okay, well, I can actually share with you a couple of instances. These weren't directly related to the utility imposter scam, but the larger, is it the Canadian Revenue Association? Is that what CRA stands for? Yes. So larger CRA scams, we celebrated, UUS celebrated when we read articles back in the fall of 2018 and again in 2019, where the Royal Canadian Mounted Police executed successful stings of scam call centers, basically running those tax scams against Canadian citizens in those time frames. In one case, I believe they arrested 32 Indian nationals who were executing these scams out of a fraudulent call center. And another one, it was 28 criminals who were apprehended in those busts. And really the key there is, again, you know, just countless reports of victims, each one a small victim of crime, just building up to this very large case. There was also a recent case in the U.S. with the Internal Revenue Service scam, where I believe that the individual was arrested back in 2017 or 2018, but he was just convicted back in November of 2020. The ringleader, again, another Indian call center operation that was running this IRS scam, and the ringleader there was sentenced to 20 years in prison and fined $9 million. So there are people in law enforcement at the national level, both in the Canada and the U.S., who are paying attention and are specifically focusing on these, you know, very lucrative scams, these very lucrative criminal operations, and building cases and seeking international partnerships to bust these operations. I think that those two are an example of operations that were claiming hundreds of millions, if not more, dollars in ill-gotten gains. And so they're probably slightly bigger fish in these utility scams. I think these utility scammers are probably collecting millions of dollars a year, but not hundreds of millions of dollars a year, which is why these other tax-related scams are gaining more attention.
Jared, tell me, what is at the heart or lack thereof of a scammer's intention? What are some behaviors that are evidence of this?
So, you know, one of the things that we have spent a lot of time understanding is what is the utility imposter scammer's MO? Are they spending a lot of time researching their victims to create a really, you know, compelling story that increases their hit rate? Or are they they're going for high volume, low yield, but making their money off of volume? And it's really the latter. And so what I've noticed very quickly in the countless times that I've called these fraud numbers to validate their fraud numbers to get them shut down, frankly, is that the scammers very quickly try to ascertain whether you are a likely victim. So if you want to talk with them about anything about address change, sometimes I make up that I'm calling about an outage, they will immediately try and turn it into a conversation about an outstanding debt that is supposedly going to trigger a disconnection. And if you don't signal any sort of gullibility toward it at that particular time, they're going to end the call really quickly. They'll try and do it in a way that makes it seem polite enough that you'll still walk away from that thinking that it was a legitimate utility interaction. But in reality, once you step back, you realize they didn't give me any customer service at all. They were just trying to figure out if I was a likely mark for them or not. That's the biggest one. The second biggest one is that, you know, our customer care agents go through countless hours of training in order to how to maintain professionalism, how to be attentive to customers, to listen to their needs. The scammers, they get frustrated really quickly. And if you attempt to call them out, they will very quickly turn on you and say some things that are very rude, things that can't even be repeated on a podcast. So that is another obvious giveaway, is that if the person you're talking to starts to become rude, aggressive, or exerts pressure in any way, They're not a utility representative.
Okay. Now, in contrast, tell us what's at the heart of any utility as they engage with customers. How can customers use these contrasting intentions as a litmus test?
So, recognizing that these scammers might listen to this podcast, I'm always a little bit careful to give away all of the strategies I use to validate that when I'm calling them up, that they are indeed scammers. However, the obvious signs of a trained utility rep are, number one, they're going to be attentive to your needs. Number two, they are not going to try and pressure you into anything, because our goal is to make sure that you are a happy customer, that you're getting the service that you need. And if you happen to be facing financial hardship or difficulty paying, we're not going to threaten you with this connection. We're going to offer up payment arrangements, ways to structure your utility debt so that you can maintain service with us. The last thing that a utility professional wants to do is to see your account be disconnected for non-payment. Our goal is to try and work with you as much as we can to keep you engaged and to work within your means with deferred payment arrangements and things like that. So if the person on the other line is not really working with you, then that is and they had called you first, and that is, you know, a pretty obvious sign right there that they're not a legitimate utility representative. Secondly, also, as I mentioned before, a scammer is not going to want to spend any time talking with you about anything other than you're making a payment to them quickly. So if you have questions about, say, value-added products and services, or if you are having service, you had a service disruption due to a storm or something like that, you could always ask a question about that and see how they handle it. And if they handle it with knowledge and they actually are able or showing a willingness to take the time to understand your issue, then that's a more than likely a legitimate utility representative. If, however, they constantly bring it back to your fictitious outstanding debt, then you know you're dealing with a scammer.
Finally, Jared, what does success look like for Utilities United Against Scams? What is your hope for the next 5-10 years?
So, you know, my original answer to this, Dan, kind of changed as I thought about it a little bit more, especially as we have our 5-year anniversary of Utility United Against Scams coming up just next week, actually. And, you know, I was thinking the knee-jerk reaction would be to say, well, I'd like us to basically put these scammers out of business so we could disband, so that there's no need for Utilities United Against Scams. I think that is, you know, a little bit too rosy-eyed, of course. I think that I did like to make these utility imposter scams go away and then just maintain kind of maintain the collaborative, but maintain it in such a way where we're just touching base, sharing information about anything that might be looking suspicious in our markets, and making sure that we are keeping scam activity at a minimum and keeping law enforcement and policymakers fully engaged so that scams don't flare back up to the problem that they are right now. So my goal really is to achieve that combination of policy solutions as well as sheer operational tactics with partners in telecom and the prepaid card space and the other financial mechanisms that the scammers use to shut down the loopholes so that this utility imposter scam goes away. And then Utilities United Against Scams is a organization that just meets periodically to keep tabs on the market and make sure that things aren't flaring up again.
Jared, this is it. Are you ready to close us off with some rapid fire questions?
Sure. Hit me, Dan.
Okay, let's start with the first one. What is your favorite word?
My favorite word this year is yes. The reason I say that is because we accomplished so many things on the fly, responding to the pandemic and the important things that we as utilities had to do to help take care of our communities last year, that previously the answer would have been either no or it's going to take us a long time to figure that out. So I feel like I and the rest of the industry have been opened up to the power of possibility. And so this is the year of answering all those possibilities with yes.
Now tell me, Jared, what is one thing you can't live without?
My morning workout.
Okay, moving on. What habit or hobby have you picked up during shelter in place?
Started making mead. And it is, I find it delicious. I'm not sure that those in my family or my wife have the same opinion. But I would.
If you could have one superpower, Jared, what would it be?
The ability to sleep through the night without waking up for a variety of reasons.
Okay. If you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell him?
I would tell him not to be so shy. I was fairly shy in my pre-professional life and even the early years of being in the professional world. And I've come to learn that you miss out on a lot by being shy.
And lastly, what do you currently find interesting in your sector?
So there are so many interesting things going on, but I think what is most interesting to me and the reason why I'm excited to be in this industry for at least another 15 years before I'm ready to retire is that societies have made it one of their central goals to achieve carbon neutrality. And utilities are at the center of that, not only in terms of hitting our goals within our companies, but being the ones best positioned to offer solutions to help major industries that are our customers help achieve their carbon neutral goals. And so I think the amount of opportunity and the number of interesting challenges that we face in the utility industry on that front is very exciting to me and one of the reasons why I'm thrilled to continue to be a utility leader.
Again, thank you for joining us today. I hope you had a lot of fun. Cheers.
I did. This was fantastic, Dan. I hope, as you can tell, I am really passionate about fighting scammers, fighting criminals who take advantage of utility customers. And so I welcome any opportunity to talk about this topic.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Think Energy Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you're listening. And to find out more about today's guests or previous episodes, visit thinkenergypodcast.com. I hope you'll join us again next time as we spark even more conversations about the energy of tomorrow.